TikTok is taking over social media 3 minutes at a time. The Chinese-owned company is now the most downloaded social media app in the world, with more than a billion users in 154 countries watching short videos non-stop. Bigger than Facebook, bigger than Instagram, bigger than Snapchat. With that sort of size and Chinese ownership comes attention. American politicians, including former President Trump, have called for bans on TikTok for threatening privacy and US national security. And documentary filmmaker Shalini Kantaya delves into the security issues, the geopolitical concerns, and the cultural impacts of the app through the stories of Gen Z's influencers. Now, they're well aware of the best and worst aspects of the app, but they use it anyway. Her documentary is called TikTok Boom, and Shalini Kantaya joins me now. Hi there.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, great to chat to you. This is your second film looking at the power of tech after Coded Bias, which is about the AI and facial recognition. TikTok Boom looks at algorithms on that social media platform. So I guess first question, what draws you to telling these tech stories on film?
Well, I'm always fascinated by disruptive technology. I'm someone who reads Wired religiously. I'm just obsessed with new technology. And I'm also interested in whether it increases opportunity, whether it's good for democracy, and how disruptive technologies can disrupt power. And I think TikTok Boom is a great example of that.
Yeah, can you tell me some of the questions you had going into TikTok Boom?
Well, like many of us during the pandemic, I was stuck at home and I started hearing about this sort of dance app, best known for sort of teenagers dancing. And then I started hearing about it as the center of a geopolitical controversy between two superpowers, the US and China. And I started to get fascinated with this question, you know, how does a social media app best known for teenagers dancing become at the center of a national security scandal between two of the world's largest superpowers?
Technology connects to so many fundamental issues. Free speech, big one in the US at the moment. Who gets to control the technology? There's mental health too. So is part of your reason for making these films a bit of a wake-up call to people blindly using these apps?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that someone was talking about just how fast the world has changed. I think specifically since 2007 with the adoption of the iPhone. And I think that if we look back 20 years, we would quite find our society and our human relationships unrecognizable. And sometimes we don't quite recognize in the moment the impact that these technologies are having on our lives. And I think in the case of TikTok, it became sort of the center of many, I think in the crosshairs of many countries' investigations, because it's the first social media app to sort of challenge the power of Silicon Valley. And we've never seen a social media app with billions of users all around the world come from a country that is not democratic, that is authoritarian like China. And I think that poses new questions to the large-scale adaptation of these technologies.
You can't talk about TikTok without talking about its owners. Who are they and how did TikTok come to be?
Well, I think learning about the story of TikTok is quite like hearing many of sort of the origin stories of Silicon Valley. It's quite like a Zuckerberg story in the sense that Yimeng Zhang, who started TikTok, was, you know, sort of a college student and had this crazy idea of having this recommendation algorithm system. And I think that is part of what makes the technology in TikTok so sticky is just how powerful this artificial intelligence is in showing you content that it predicts will hold your attention. And I think it's both awe-inspiring and powerful and also slightly terrifying.
Do you agree with Scott Drury, the expert you spoke to in the film, that that due to that secret algorithm, TikTok actually learns to know us better than we know ourselves?
Yes. I mean, I think that what is unique about TikTok is that it's not information that you're inputting. It's not who you like or who you follow that determines what shows up in your feed. It's actually sort of watching you watch it. And so it's almost more accurate than self-reporting because it's really showing you in real time how many seconds a video is holding your attention. And these videos are quite creative, I have to say. And it can be quite astounding how well this algorithm seems to know you personally, knows your interests and gauges what can keep your attention. I know for me, I was quite like awe-inspired by how well this and how sticky and addictive this technology really is. And I think that, you know, in many ways it works the same way YouTube and other recommendation algorithms work. But I think the other issue that I feel really passionately and part of the reason I made the film is that, you know, for in TikTok's early inception, because it acquired Musical.ly, which is best known for having sort of a preteen audience of lip syncing preteens, for some time, the New York Times had reported that a third of TikTok's users were under 14. And what I'm concerned about is not just specific to TikTok, it's about what these very powerful persuasive recommendation algorithms, what impact they're having on the lives of children and on the development of brains that are not fully developed. And I think that's one thing that we really need to pay greater attention to.
Yeah, you're not leading the journey with TikTok, are you? It's leading you.
Well, absolutely. I think that one of the concerns that some of the national security experts that I spoke to had was that, you know, if a child starts using TikTok when they're 10, by the time they're 18, that algorithm and the kind of data that has been collected about that child can almost predict your behavior better than a parent can. And one of the things that national security experts are concerned about is sort of pushing this sort of soft propaganda, something that we've seen certainly on Facebook and on Twitter and other platforms. It's definitely not exclusive to TikTok. But again, because TikTok is owned by a Chinese company, it poses unique concerns that I think, and questions that we've never had to grapple with before.
Yeah. By the way, I heard a rumor a year or so ago that TikTok had the ability to use your phone's camera to watch your face to record your reaction to certain videos. Is that just hyperbole or is there a chance that actually happens?
I have read reports that TikTok does collect biometric data. Biometric data are face prints and voice prints. I have not been able to clarify whether it's being collected while you're making videos or why you're scrolling, but I do have reporting from multiple sources that they do collect biometric data.
And part of the problem is transparency, right? You've got no idea what they're doing with your data and they don't share much.
Absolutely. And I think that's what's kind of heartbreaking about this, and not just TikTok, but all big tech companies. Here in the United States, when we in the 1990s passed laws to protect children, there was research and reporting that showed that children couldn't tell the difference between sort of the sugary cereal and sort of Elmo, the puppeteer from Sesame Street. And so they had to create this break. And what is worrisome is that these tech companies aren't allowing us the data, access to the data that would give us the research we need to pass laws to protect children. For instance, Instagram knew that Instagram was causing, the use of Instagram was increasing, rates of anorexia, depression in young girls, and they hid the research. And the only reason that we, for 2 years, and the only reasons that we found out was because of brave whistleblowers. And I'm so grateful to the whistleblowers in TikTok Boom and the journalists that told those stories, and to the whistleblowers who continue to put their, professional reputations and sometimes lives at stake to tell us the truth about the dark side of big tech.
I'm talking to Shalini Kantaya, who's the director of a film called TikTok Boom, documentary about the social media app. Plenty of people have called for a ban on it. One top official calls TikTok China's digital fentanyl. Do we know enough to know whether that's true, or how much harm it might be doing to kids in particular?
Well, I think that we're living in an age where we have to be really careful about how we speak about this. I live in New York. In the last 2 years, my heart has been broken by the amount of anti-Asian violence that we've seen on the rise all around the world. And so I don't want to confuse the government and the CCP with people. And I think that's sort of the danger of what we're talking about. And then I also want to say that a lot of what TikTok is doing, other companies like Instagram, like Facebook are doing, and it does have this unique challenge. That being said, I think here is the rub. Here in the US, TikTok swears that it is an American company. We know that it is owned by China. And China has a law that basically says that if you are a Chinese company and the government requests information, you essentially have to give them that information. And so herein lies the rub, is that TikTok can sort of make promises that it is separate, that its data servers are in the US and in Singapore in the case of the US. But the truth is that because this law is on the books in China, that this still poses a risk. And even after the Trump era, and the Trump era, we have to be a little suspicious because President Trump spewed so much xenophobia and anti-Asian sentiment that I felt was destructive to our culture and our society, and that I think has no room. But I think aside from that, our FCC here in the US has recommended a ban on TikTok, on Apple and Google. And I think that suggests that there may be some legitimate security concerns that we have to pay attention to. And I think what this points to more largely is that we share this data that's very personal about us every day. And often we don't think about how a nefarious actor, be it a government or some other nefarious actor, can use it and can weaponize this data, this everyday data. And I think this is sort of what this brings to light, is how our data that we think is ordinary can actually be weaponized against us.
What do you make of China's laws that limit children using their version of TikTok to 40 minutes a day?
I support it. I don't think there's any parent in the world that would say my child needs to be on TikTok more. I think it's better for their human development. I'm concerned. And I think these 40-second bites may pose challenge to how children's concentration adapts. So I would be in favor. I think we're living in an age that is sort of like the automotive industry before we had seatbelt laws, or pharmaceutical products before we had, a label on the medication, that we're using tech with no sort of hygiene, with no standards of mental health and safety especially for children. And I think that we need to take a stronger stance on this.
Is apathy our biggest enemy here?
I think so. I mean, I think that many times I talk to people who say, I don't care about what Facebook knows about me or what Instagram knows about me or what TikTok knows about me. But I think that we're just in the beginning of understanding that data rights are human rights and the ways in which who owns the data has the power in our society by these new technologies like AI that are yielded. And so I think we as consumers of these products need to educate ourselves about how these algorithms work, about their impact, especially on children, and how we can help mitigate the worst of these impacts, both on mental health and to think about security.
We haven't talked about censorship, and as you say, or as you suggest, we have to be a little bit careful talking about the fact that it's Chinese owned, that we're not sort of lapsing into xenophobia. However, there are concerns about coming from a country with an authoritarian regime and a very tight approach to freedom of speech. One of the TikTok influencers you talked to is an Afghan teenager who slipped a message about the plight of Uyghurs in China into a lesson on eyelash curling, and that video was taken down. TikTok says that was human error. What do you think?
Feroza Aziz, a 17-year-old teenager who is one of my heroes. I think one of my favorite parts of making TikTok boom was the Gen Z influencers that I had the opportunity to get to know and spend time with. And I think the thing is that we don't know. Here was Feroza Aziz, age 17, posting something against the treatment. The Chinese government's treatment of Uyghur Muslims, and mysteriously, the post gets taken down, and subsequently, her account gets taken down. And I think what this poses is this question around content moderation, which at these big tech companies, and I think Elon Musk buying Twitter sort of also brings this to the surface, content moderation happens in the shadows. And the issue is in democracies like ours, we celebrate free speech. As a journalist, I am so grateful when I get to engage and have a respectful disagreement of opinion. I think that moves our society forward. I think that's part of the democratic process. And what I worry about is that we as democracies don't always agree on what free speech is. As David Polgar in my film cites, that we fight it out in our courts, what is free speech and how we balance individual expression with the safety of our society. And sometimes it changes from generation to generation. And here what we have are big tech companies, these mammoths, like these multinational corporations like Twitter and Facebook and TikTok, have become our public squares, the places where we share our political opinions. And what I am concerned about is that there is absolutely no transparency about how these black box algorithms work. And I think that is at great, great detriment to democracies. And I'm talking not just about TikTok here, but also about Facebook and about Twitter.
What's your advice to parents, given what you know, what you've learnt about TikTok? Advice to parents and maybe to, school principals and other people in charge of what our kids are doing with their phones.
Well, I hope they'll share the movie and talk about it with their kids. I definitely hope that it's a film that parents and kids can watch together. I think that the best thing we can do for kids right now is to have these critical discussions. I think since the pandemic, young people are having a collective mental health crisis brought on also because of being cooped up inside and having to mediate their lives through technology. And I think that we need to have a conversation about social media and mental health, and we need to give them some tools to be literate and to be critical. and to, you know, sometimes log off.
Yeah, hard to log off when there are multi-billion dollar companies putting everything they can into keeping us on the phone, right?
Absolutely. I mean, these are the most powerful, persuasive, addictive artificial intelligence technologies, I think, in the history of the world. And I think that we have to think critically about how they're used.
Do you have hope that positive change can happen to make TikTok and other social media safer, maybe more democratic?
I think everything is up to us. I think we're in a moment where, with all these technologies, the cement is still wet. But I think that we just can't relegate ourselves to users. There's that saying that, like, only there's two people that call their clients users. It's drug dealers and tech companies. And I think we can't be just sit back and be users. I think that we need to be literate, and we need to advocate for the kind of change we need. And we need to also defend our kids, mental health first and foremost.
I can tell you're not going to tell parents that they should be deleting the app, but you think it's more constructive to let your kids use it and do it with their eyes open.
Well, I think for everyone, it's really different. And I think everything, the tech in itself is just like a tool, like every technology is. A knife, you know, cutting cucumbers is exactly the right tool. A knife in the hand of someone angry is a weapon. And I feel like technology is exactly that. It can be a great benefit to society. And it's really up to us to govern these technologies. And I think first we have to understand fully how they work. And I hope that literacy, understanding how recommendation algorithms like TikTok work, and even what it's doing to our brains, can help us be to have a healthier relationship with these technologies and get the benefits from them while mitigating the harms as much as possible.
And to use, to borrow your phrase, to avoid sleepwalking through these massive changes that are happening around us.
Absolutely. And what I can tell you is that I do not have TikTok on my phone, and I perpetually take other platforms off my phone just because I find actually that it makes me happier and it makes me talk to people in my real life. And I'm not suggesting that, but I think we all have to find what means balance and what is right for our equilibrium in our own lives with our relationship to technology.
Well, thanks for talking to us today. I've been speaking to Charlene Kantaya, who's the director of TikTok Boom. Now, you can watch that on the PBS website. I've got a link to it on our page, rnz.co.nz/Jesse. Nice idea watching with the kids, Charlene. And thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks so much for having me. It was an honor.